Our text for this morning, our text for preaching, comes from the Good News according to Luke. It is the story on which our anthem was based, a story about love and welcome and healing. So I invite you to listen for God's living word to you this day in these words and in what follows. On the way to Jerusalem, Jesus was going through the region between Samaria and Galilee. As he entered a village, 10 lepers approached him. Keeping their distance, they called out, saying, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." When he saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priest." And as they went, they were made clean. Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice. He prostrated himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus asked, "Were not 10 made clean? But the other 9, where are they? Was none of them found to return and give praise to God except for this foreigner?" Then he said to him, "Get up, go on your way. Your faith has made you well." The word of God for the people of God. One of the most memorable sermons I've ever heard was focused on this passage that I just read. The preacher was Dr. Robert Bob Dykstra, professor of pastoral theology at Princeton Theological Seminary, PTS. He offered the sermon at a chapel service at the seminary. He could have chosen any text from the entire Bible for this occasion, but this distinguished professor of pastoral theology chose this passage. The reason behind Dr. Dykstra's choice became immediately obvious. It's because he had skin in the game. I'm going to quote him, that sermon actually, at some length, because he tells his story better than I can. "By mid-adolescence," he says, "I had developed an unusually severe, almost textbook case of acne, though one mostly confined to areas on my back and chest, and therefore mercifully hidden under my shirt from the gaze of others. I say textbook case because of a conversation I had with a physician friend years later. As we talked one day, I happened to mention to my friend that if I were ever to develop a serious infection, I was sure there would be no antibiotics left to treat me, because of a tolerance I had developed after so many years of taking them for acne as a youth. She asked me which drugs I had taken, and as I went through the list and got to the last and most potent, called Dapsone, she casually remarked, 'Oh, the leprosy drug.' I went to the physician's desk, referenced the drug Bible, and looked up Dapsone, and there it was, the primary drug used to treat Hansen's disease, a contemporary form of leprosy. Though I had suspected it since early childhood, at 27, a doctor confirmed I was indeed a leper. Back when I was 16, I cringed one day when my minister casually touched my shoulder because it hurt. He asked why I flinched. I didn't respond. He had a long memory, however, and days later, he asked if he could see my back. I told him no. He wanted to know why, but again, I would not say. We played this game for a while, so great was my shame, until for some reason, perhaps sheer exhaustion, but more likely an inner desire to be known, I relented. We were together in church, in the sanctuary of all places, when I lifted up my shirt for him. He told me he was sorry I had suffered this alone, that he was proud of me for letting me see, and that he thought it would help me to see a doctor, which to that point I had not done. Thus would begin my years of antibiotics and some tangible relief from an embodied source of shame. Today, of course, a minister asking an adolescent to lift his shirt in church immediately raises eyebrows. But this, I think, would be the wrong lesson to draw. There is no question that healing for my own leprosy, not only in its most overt form as acne, but in its more invidious expression as shame, began long before I took a single capsule of antibiotics. Rather, the great healing came in lifting my shirt before a sufficiently attentive, caring other, and especially doing so in the safety of that sanctuary. I found with graphic clarity in that particular space and action a God who was as concerned with my body as with my soul. I found acceptance, a sanctuary for my embodied shame. Go and show yourself to a priest, Dr. Dykstra encouraged us, not by lifting our shirts, of course, especially not in this day and age, but by simply opening up and sharing our pain, because the truth is, we all have things we're hiding. We've all suffered slights and pains and insults that have left us feeling wounded or hurt or caused us, in fact, to feel shame. Feelings we perhaps continue to internalize to this day. Or maybe we've done things that were so regrettable, so out of character, they continue to haunt us. If so, show yourself to a priest, as Dr. Dykstra encouraged us students to do, as Jesus encouraged these lepers to do. In doing so, you might find that you've started down the path that leads to your healing. This was a brilliant sermon on its face, but the reason it was so powerful for me is that it struck a nerve. Like Bob Dykstra, I suffered from a severe case of acne as a teenager. The difference is that as a starting member of the Belfouche Bronx High School basketball team, I could not hide my affliction. Every time I put on my uniform, took the court, my acne-ravaged shoulders and upper arms were on full display for all the world to see. I would much rather have shown them to a priest. That would have been an easier option for me, to be sure, than bearing my afflicted skin. Looking back now, though, many years later, there is one problem with this approach. Simply put, priests, ministers too, are not magic. We're not infallible. We are ordinary people prone to making mistakes just like everyone else. And this point was powerfully driven home to me by my good friend, Catherine Cartledge. Some of you know Catherine. She and her then partner, Elizabeth Eve, bought Dick and Julia Richards' house on North Lane. What you may not know, though, is that Catherine is an ordained United Church of Christ minister. In effect, she's become a priest herself, a minister, which is really something of a miracle in light of what happened to her. Indeed, the fact that Catherine is alive at all is its own kind of miracle. Today, Catherine calls the UCC her home, but growing up, she was a Presbyterian, a member, I believe, of Central Presbyterian in Atlanta. I think that's right. But even as a young girl, she was a Presbyterian in any case, and as a young girl, Catherine knew she was different from all the other girls. At the level of her outward appearance, the level of her skin, she just looked different. But she felt different inwardly, too, less girly girl, and frankly, a little more like a boy. Now we've come a long way since those days when Catherine was young. Today, even as an out married lesbian, Catherine can serve the church as an ordained minister. And that's not just a benefit to Catherine, though it is that too. It's a benefit to all of us, to the church at large. It makes us bigger, it makes our tent wider, and it makes us just better. Diversity, inclusivity always makes us better. And it says to the world that we are not, in fact, an institution mired in the 19th century or 17th, for that matter. We are equipped for and responsive to the challenges of the 21st century, the challenges and opportunities of a highly diverse, complex world. But it hasn't always been that way. When Catherine was in her teens, she felt like something was wrong with her. So she went to see her pastor, Joanna Adams, and this story is told on a CD produced by the Covenant Network. Joanna was a young, inexperienced minister at the time. This was back when women themselves, as a class, had only recently won the right to be ordained. Perhaps because of that connection, because Catherine and Joanna were each in their separate ways, members of a class of people that were not immediately, wholeheartedly welcomed by the church, Catherine wound up her courage and showed herself, revealed herself to Joanna Adams, her pastor, as a lesbian. She confessed to her minister that she felt like something was wrong with her. In her own words, that she had internalized the cultural disdain for me. In a moment that would change both their lives, Joanna agreed with her. She told young Catherine that she did not understand homosexuality, but one thing she knew for sure is that it fell short of what God intended for her, Catherine. In a gesture of extreme vulnerability, Catherine showed herself to a priest, to her minister, and the priest pronounced her unclean. Catherine left Joanna's office, not surprisingly, angry and wounded, and in more pain than she felt when she went in. So she went home and did what far too many LGBTQ youth have done. She picked up a revolver and attempted, as she put it, to blow the pain away. Now, I'm very glad to report that Catherine did not succeed in her attempt to take her life, and what a mercy that was. She went on to have a long and inspirational career as a pastor and as an activist, and she is now married to Elizabeth, the love of her life. I should also say that Catherine and Joanna have since reconciled, priest to priest, minister to minister, sharing their truth and their truth with and their love for one another. I'm also, so even though Joanna made a terrible mistake, she owned it, and that served to build her relationship ultimately with Catherine. I'm also glad to call Catherine a friend and a neighbor and my teacher. Catherine not only helped teach me how much, along with others, not only helped me teach me how much better and more welcoming the church is with her in an ordained position in it, she also helped me see something about this passage I had not seen before. Dr. Bob Dykstra helped me understand this text as a healing story, one that was relevant directly to me. But Catherine Cartledge's experience helped me understand that this is also a teaching story. Jesus enters a village and is met there by 10 lepers, 10 people who are so, 10 people who are so unclean they are barred from society and forced to live outside the gates of the city. 10 completely innocent human beings who were so feared they were forced to wear bells around their necks to warn unsuspecting citizens of their presence so that they could flee from these monsters. Get anywhere near them and you become unclean yourself, and so must spend some time in quarantine with them, walled off from the wider community. Now, in fairness, in Jesus' day, when you came near a leper, you did risk contracting the disease yourself, for leprosy is highly communicable. Its effects are devastating, and of course, at the time, they were also untreatable. So the people's fears weren't entirely groundless. But the part that was so wrong, the part that is so sad, is that this fear was given religious sanction. Not unlike what happens today. Lepers weren't sick, they were unclean. Their skin condition was not the result of an infection, it was an abomination. They deserved to be treated with mercy and compassion, and instead they were ostracized, kept closeted away at a safe distance. So the lepers approached Jesus cautiously, the bells on their necks ringing, keeping their distance as they are required to do by law. They ask him to have mercy on them. It's a simple request, but a profound one too. Go and show yourselves to the priest, Jesus replies. Why does he tell them to do this? Surely he could have healed them on the spot. What if this act, this request, this charge, is not just for them? What if it is also for the priest? What if he, the priest, also needs to be healed? Because here's the thing. One of these lepers is so moved, he turns around to say thanks. And as it happens, he's the worst of the lot, for he has an underlying condition that can't be cured. One that runs much farther down, deeper than his skin, down to the core of this man's identity, for he is a Samaritan. Ethnically, he's as unclean as a leper, as reviled in that culture as a dog. Maybe sending him to see the priest had nothing to do with his leprosy and everything to do with his humanity. Unwittingly, the man hands Jesus the perfect teaching moment. "Were not 10 made clean?" Jesus asks the crowd who've come to gape at this spectacle. "The other 9, where are they? Was none of them found to return to give praise to God except this foreigner?" It's a startling word, that one. In the language of the day, foreigner happens to be the same word that appears on the keep out sign that on the inner outside of the inner barrier of the temple, the signs that were meant to preserve the sanctity of God's house and to prevent it from being defiled by men just like this one. And it underscores how mean that prohibition is. "Go and show yourself to the priest," Jesus instructs him. "You are a child of God, and you have no cause to be ashamed just because you're a Samaritan. Indeed, I'm rewriting these laws as we go along, and I'd love for you to help me with that. Go and show yourself to the priest. And by the way, on your way into the temple, please tear down that silly foreigner sign, for God's house is open to everyone." A number of years ago, I was working on a sermon on this very text when I received an unsolicited email out of the blue. It came from someone I'll call Jeff. It seemed that he was planning to move to Asheville. Apparently, he had seen our website. "What do you mean when you say your church is inclusive?" he wrote succinctly, furtively. In light of what happened to Catherine, it was impossible not to hear the question behind that question, impossible not to feel the fear behind his words. Would I be safe in your church? Will I be made to feel welcome, or will I be made to feel like a leper? Will you see me as a beautiful child of God, or will you see me as unclean? Will you treat me like a family member or like a foreigner, like a Samaritan? Will I have to announce my presence to the unsuspecting and the fearful? And will they run from me when they discover who I am? "No, Jeff," I replied. "No, Jeff, you won't have to wear a bell around your neck or hide your identity. Not here. If some of us felt that way at one time, we no longer feel that way. God has changed our hearts, expanded our minds, broadened our theology, helped us to love the way God loves. You are welcome to worship here in this inner sanctuary along with the rest of us Samaritans and lepers. For God has transformed us all, and God's house is open to all." That was several years ago, and I'm aware that questions of sexual orientation now seem almost quaint, but that is only because groups like the Covenant Network, along with hundreds of individuals, ordained and not, including many of us in this room, worked hard and steadily to make the church more open and welcoming to all of its members, regardless of their orientation. But this effort to build a church that is as just and generous as God's grace continues to this day, because this story about these 10 lepers and this Samaritan man is always true. And I suspect, strongly suspect, Jesus will continue to send lepers and Samaritans our way into this inner sanctum. Maybe that leper lives inside you and is longing to feel loved and accepted for who you are, or forgiven and cleansed for something you've done long ago, or something you've done last week. Or maybe that Samaritan is your cousin, whom you knew as Cheryl growing up, but who now goes by Nathan, or your neighbor Frank, who's been a Donald Trump supporter, an economic refugee, if you will, a man who lost his job when it was shipped to China, and now, after that tape came out last Friday. He is a political refugee because at heart, he is a good and decent man. He loves his wife, cherishes his daughters, and he is now looking for a place to call home where he and his family will be loved and welcomed. Or maybe it's Amal and Saeed Ahmed, literal refugees, Syrians looking for a place that will welcome them, a place to call home where they can be safe and raise their child in a loving community, because this story is always true. And so over and over again, we will get the opportunity to take down that silly foreigner sign, to welcome everyone into this space, this sacred, safe, beautiful, healing space, and say together, all God's children are loved and welcome.